So our aim in this talk is to give you some overview of what CEA's foundational research is going to be going forward. You might be wondering why there's two of us. The reason is that we represent two different teams within CEA. One of them is setting up an academic institute that will be part of Oxford University, and the other we're calling the Fundamentals Research Team at CEA. There's actually going to be a third research team as well, which is going to be doing particularly applied research and also applications of research. The particular content of that team is likely to vary once we've tested out different kinds of models and seen what works, but the things that we're going to be working on to start off with are boutique philanthropic advising, doing policy work, and also creating online tools. Hopefully you've all seen the new EA.org and the interactive cause prioritization tool that we built using the flowchart created by Global Priorities Project. All of this stuff is really preliminary. CEA is going through a bunch of restructuring at the moment, so we're very much using you guys as a sounding board, and we're looking forward to hearing all your comments and questions afterwards. So we're going to start off by making a couple of comments on why we're focusing on research. This change in team structure is meaning that we're putting quite a bit more resources into foundational research in particular than CEA has in the past. So I'll be giving some motivation for that. Then we'll be discussing what kinds of research it seems to make sense for effective altruism as a whole to do, and CEA more specifically, followed by concretely how we plan to structure the particular teams and what they'll each be doing. So first of all, why the emphasis on research? We might make a distinction between two different kinds of movements, intellectual movements and grassroots movements. So to give a couple of examples of this, Marxism largely came from an intellectual ideology, whereas the Occupy movement is very much a grassroots, large numbers of people protesting type of movement. So a couple of the distinctions in this space seem to be that intellectual types of movements have fewer people, but they're each individually very influential, whereas grassroots movements try to mobilize really large numbers of people. Then intellectual types of movements are more focused on ideas and concepts, whereas grassroots movements are more based on a particular solid change and really engage the passions of people to make that change happen. This is obviously a really vague category, so you might think of feminism as neither an intellectual movement nor a grassroots movement, or both. If you look back at like Mary Wollstonecraft and John Stuart Mill, it seems to have a very solid intellectual tradition, but then protesting for women's suffrage and things, a very concrete mass movement type of change. So it's not the case that we have to be one movement or the other, but you might want to work out which we concentrate on. Effective altruism defines itself as improving the lives of others as much as we can using evidence and reason. So it seems like we're an inherently intellectual movement. That's obviously a very difficult standard to meet. But there are a bunch of benefits associated to being a specifically intellectual movement. One of them is this potentially high leverage. If you can get some really influential people on board, then they can make a large change without you needing to get nearly as many people on board as you would need for a mass movement. This might also be a better approach to take if you haven't yet found the most important area or cause or intervention to focus on, because a smaller number of higher engaged people are more likely to be able to pivot as a group and actually change their actions based on new evidence. Also, if you're trying to attract really good thinkers, you're more likely to be able to find the right answers and find the cause that we haven't yet found, will cause X. An intellectual type of movement might also be better adapted for comprehensive worldviews rather than one small change. So it seems like mass movements like women's suffrage work well, as does vegetarianism, whereas if you look at the Occupy movement, you might think that one reason that it seemed to not get a huge amount of traction was that it was trying to really overturn the system by doing that, and so it didn't have enough direction. So if we're trying to really get everyone to have an entirely different mindset and adopt effective altruism throughout their lives, then you might think that that will work better by taking a more intellectual route. You might also think these kinds of movements will have specific offshoots, so you might look at the feminism model as that kind of thing, where there was this initial intellectual tradition and it spurred particular mass movements for concrete changes. And if we would probably hope that we would get similar kinds of things to that happening, and that we would want to foster them as they go. You might still want to start with going down the intellectual route. One kind of story that seemed to work well for being a movement concentrating on the intellectual tradition are the free marketeers. So in the middle of the 20th century, they were very much the minority in academia. Socialism had really taken over universities, and they went quite quickly to being both dominant in academia and also being the worldview that Reagan and Thatcher ascribed to. There are a few different tools they used. One of these is fostering talent, so they endowed chairs at prominent universities for people to work on free market economics. They sponsored top students to go and study under those professors, so really thinking long term in terms of the talent pipeline. They also focused on what are sometimes called second-hand traders, so people taking academic types of ideas and getting them to the people who actually influence action. So they set up a number of different think tanks to use the ideas of these academics and get them to policymakers. As this implies, they will seem to be pretty well coordinated in this way, getting academics and think tanks to work together. This probably is more of a kind of story to use as a potentially exciting like lessons to learn from rather than exactly what actually happened, because it tends to be rather easy to rewrite history, and there were obviously lots of other factors involved, particularly luck and the fact they had a lot of money. But being an intellectual movement might also play to our comparative advantage. It seems like credibility and intellectual rigor are really built into the heart of effective altruism, as the definition showed. That means that we've already attracted quite a lot of detail-oriented people who really care about getting to the truth. This kind of credibility and rigor is very important for building connections with influential people. Policymakers, people who are very wealthy, tend to only take people seriously if they really know their stuff. So it's really important for us to not only, in fact, know our stuff, but also be able to come across in that way. So for that, it seems like we have an inherent advantage compared to some other kinds of groups. We also tend to be fairly well networked in top universities. CEA started at Oxford University. There are now EA chapters at most top universities in the UK and the US, starting to be in other parts of the world. Journalists and policymakers tend to come from elite universities, so it's pretty useful to already have groups set up there. Intellectual movement building also seems like a time-consuming process. The kinds of things I described from the free marketeers took, you know, definitely years, maybe decades to properly come to fruition. So it's beneficial to not be politically affiliated so that we don't have to worry as much about will everything be for nothing when we get the next prime minister or president. We might also have a coordination advantage. People have claimed that effective altruists are particularly good at working together because they all have one goal in mind, and they really value being humble and open-minded, and that kind of thing means that as a group we might be, find it more easy to work together than other groups. So how might we go about building an intellectual movement? Well, first of all, we probably want to focus on ideas. Some of the values that we might want to really value highly are curiosity, openness to new ideas, openness to changing our mind, as Amy and Will have already been highlighting, and then high standards of rigor. The kinds of activity that we probably want to be doing is really high quality research in the ideas surrounding effective altruism. That's useful because it means that we're likely to find crucial considerations that would really radically change what we ought to do, as well as building a solid foundation so that we knew that those crucial considerations were likely to, you know, actually be true rather than changing on a dime. It also means that it's easy to demonstrate that we have a really thriving research area that politicians and journalists should be interested in. the importance of academia in particular? Well, first of all, academia attracts really top talent. It tends to be appealing to smart people who like to find out the exact truth. Universities tend to try and instill in people a feeling that being a professor is what it means to succeed. Academic departments are also specifically designed for doing careful, thorough, groundbreaking research. They don't necessarily always succeed in actually having the right incentives, but there are a lot of kinds of institutions that work well for that, like the peer review system, where you have an automatic body of people who are trying to figure out whether your research is actually novel and rigorous enough. Academia also tends to work very well as a platform for the rest of the world, both because the media tends to like to talk about academics specifically. So you can see this example of Toby when he was first setting up Giving What We Can, getting quite a bit of attention specifically for being a crazy Oxford academic doing this thing. And then Future Humanity Institute has found that they've managed to get a huge amount of attention in mass media because journalists want to show that their research, that their stuff is well-grounded, and it's from an Oxford professor is a pretty pretty good way of showing that. Policymakers also tend to want to talk to academics to get the best evidence of what policies they should be implementing. And then there are other kinds of specialized media, so things like podcasts. So from Will's book and the fact that he's a professor at Oxford, he's managed to get onto a number of podcasts like Tim Ferriss and Ross Roberts. And for things like becoming members of Giving What We Can, that actually proved to be, if anything, more valuable than the mass media, because it gives people a much longer time to actually understand the ideas. And we tended to get more people citing those things as reasons for joining Giving What We Can than citing Guardian articles, for example. So how might we engage with academia? We want to know how we can attract top academics to work on effective altruism. First of all, we need publishing on effective altruism to be well thought of in general, in order that we can get academics actually able to publish in top journals on it. One thing that you want here is visibility as a field, so that when a reviewer gets an article that's on effective altruism, they have the background sense that this is likely to be the kind of thing they're happy to publish. Then you also want there to already be a high volume of good articles published in it. A lot of the other kinds of academic outlets that are really useful, like in philosophy, we've got Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, which all students use. Currently, it won't have an article on effective altruism because there aren't enough publications on it for it to consider it as an area. So just getting more research out there would help with that. Then we'd like it to be an appealing environment for academics to work in. So trying to make it the case that academics can spend a lot of their time on research and don't have to do as much admin or things they don't like doing, but also that means that actually they're producing more research. Preferably also be able to collaborate with other people working on the same thing and other people that they respect highly in the field. So this seems to indicate that it would be good to set up some kind of institute for effective altruism. I stress this is actually a preliminary title, and we're very early stages at the moment in doing this, but seems like we have some good reasons to. So one thing that would immediately do, hopefully, is increase the visibility of effective altruism, because there'd be an institute at Oxford working on it, so people couldn't say this isn't an academic thing to work on. Then it would also hopefully mean that we could hire academics and not just allow them to work on effective altruism, but actually support them in that, and hopefully put them in a position where they don't have to do as much other like admin kinds of things, so that their output is higher.
Right. Thanks, Michelle. Okay, so let me now talk a bit about what research the effective altruism movement should be doing, and specifically what role CEA aims to play within the effective altruism research community. So the main question for effective altruism research is how to do the most good. And the answer depends on, firstly, what the best cause is. We have different causes like existential risk and global poverty and so, and animal suffering and so on. And then the second question is, what is the best intervention within the best force area? But then thirdly, you can also separate out considerations of relevance for the two first questions, because those will be sort of like all things considered judgments. But there are some considerations which don't determine the answer to the first two questions, but which are especially important and worth researching. So it's useful to separate out those considerations. So building on these three questions, we get the taxonomy of effective altruism research, where we have studies of, firstly, interventions falling under specific cause areas. And they include both evaluations of existing interventions, which is what charity evaluators are doing, for instance, like GiveWell, but also the development of new interventions, so like new interventions to reduce AI risk, for instance, could be an example of that. So there seems to be quite a lot of effective altruist research falling under that first bucket. Second, we have studies of causes, so for instance, explicit comparisons of different causes like existential risk and global poverty. Seems to be less work there. It's very difficult, admittedly, but I also think that this is something that's been a bit neglected. And then third, you have cause-specific considerations, so considerations of relevance for one specific cause. So you could have, for instance, one important consideration for global poverty is that, well, supposedly we managed to reduce poverty, to what extent does that actually increase happiness or well-being? That's highly important for how important it is to work on reducing global poverty. And then fourth, we have cross-cause considerations, which are of relevance for several or perhaps all causes. So it's a one such consideration is the replaceability arguments, which I'm sure many of you know about. But the idea is then that, well, if you think that you should work as a doctor, then you might at first glance think that, well, this is a good option because you will save many lives, but then you also need to take into account the consideration that, well, if you don't become a doctor, then someone else would replace you and save many lives, so your sort of counterfactual impact is lower than you might have thought. And now ADK are actually sort of backtracking and saying that this consideration isn't as important as they initially thought, but regardless, what the truth is here, like, this is clearly like an important consideration that we need to do research on. So that's an example of cross-cause consideration. And then lastly, we have the epistemological considerations of, like, how do we find out the truth about all the other buckets? So here, under this bucket fall, or into this bucket fall, questions like, well, to what extent should we use RCTs, and to what extent can we use other kinds of evidence? To what extent should we defer to our epistemic superiors, and to what extent should we try to figure out the truth of ourselves, and so on. So what does CA want to do within this field? So we obviously want to study the most important questions. We want to avoid crowded areas, which are relatively crowded at least within the EA community. That includes X risk, where there is, well, you know, there's quite a lot of work in it, so even though we, of course, need more, but we think that this is not where our comparative advantage is. There's also very good work in charity evaluation, so that's the reason why we really don't want to work on that. We also want to avoid, like, very labor-intensive work. We think that we will have quite small teams from the start, so we think that, like, doing the kind of work that the Open Philanthropy Project is doing very well, that will be hard for us to do at the start because we won't have as much manpower simply. And then we want to contribute to raising CAs and the EA rulings intellectual level and sort of like defining our intellectual content so branding and marketing considerations are important as well. So what does this entail then? Yeah, so we want to focus on cause-neutral areas of research. We think that they are somewhat neglected, It's also important because this like sort of defines EA as course neutral. So initially there was a lot of like association between EA and global poverty. We want to move away from that and be very clear that we're course neutral. And then of course another consideration is that like everything else equal, cross-course considerations are more valuable because they are relevant for several causes, not just one cause. So we want to study cross-cutting considerations. We also want to do explicit comparisons of causes because, as I said, this is something that we think is somewhat neglected. And then we want to study epistemological considerations to help raising our level of rigor. To some extent, we also want to study whether there are new interventions and causes which we might want to work in, and we also want to do research informing EA strategy. Skip the last one probably. So now we are moving to how our research will be structured in practice. So then one important question is then like, why do we want to have two teams? So Michelle gave lots of good arguments here for why it's important to work inside academia. So that's sort of like needs no further explanation. So the question is rather, why do we need an additional team that is working outside of academia? So there are a number of reasons for this. So one is we think it will be harder to pursue research which is sort of like only really relevant for the effective altruist movement to publish academic papers on that. Sort of like research which informs our strategy and so on. But we think that there is valuable research that needs to be done in that space. And then there might be questions which for other reasons are hard to study in academia. They might be too weird or they might be hard to study with the level of rigor that this specific discipline requires and so on. And then also an Oxford Institute will probably need to take branding issues into account to some extent, so we want to have a unit that doesn't have to do that, but that can focus solely on the most important questions. And then another important distinction is between consolidation and expansion. So we think that we have people who are very good at thinking very rigorously at these institutes. We think that this will do great work on sort of consolidating our existing body of knowledge and sort of like grounding it in the academic literature. But we also want to have a team which can move more quickly, come up with new considerations without necessarily having to like refer to all of the academic literature. So that will be what the fundamentals team will be doing to a greater extent. So, thanks.
Thanks. So, what are the actual goals of the institute going to be? First and foremost, trying to find out truths via foundational to effective altruism and what we really need to know about how we can help people the most. But we'll also be trying to build credibility within academia for effective altruism. These two things are very much linked, partly because likely the best way of building up credibility is going to be to do really excellent research, but also because the best way of actually doing great research is likely to be to try and get academics to engage with the institute, whether that means having the credibility to attract really great hires, or whether it means being able to collaborate on papers or get into discussion with academics working in other places. So the longer term vision is to grow effective altruism into a thriving area of academic interest. So that means making it viable to publish in top journals in a number of different disciplines on effective altruism, having top academics working on it at all the best universities, having other research centers bringing out specifically to study effective altruism. Then we would hope that there would be interdisciplinary courses on effective altruism at all major universities. And having multiple books published, not just on effective altruism overall, but having books on cause prioritization in other particular areas. So these are just some of the kinds of things that we would hope success would look like down the line. The kinds of things we're going to do to start are tried to be multidisciplinary from the very beginning. It's going to be much easier for us to work on philosophy because those of us starting it up are all philosophers, but we really want to make sure that we don't get the reputation that effective altruism research is entirely philosophy. So we want to try to set up research in other disciplines as soon as possible, particularly in economics. We want to make sure that we hire really top talent and also people who are aligned with effective altruism. We want to be able to coordinate well, both within the team, trying to work together on a joint research agenda, and also making sure that we work not just with other academic institutions, but also with other effective altruist organizations, in order to make sure that we're working on things that are genuinely neglected. We want to engage with other academics by putting on workshops and having visiting professors, and have a varied and prestigious advisory board, both so that we get all of the advice that we need, because we're very new to this, and also so that we get taken seriously from the very start. So if you have people that you think should be on that board, please let me know. So here are the kinds of considerations that we're looking at for working out what our first research agenda should be. We want to make sure that we begin with what the general effective altruist research landscape looks like. Stefan's already talked a bit about that, so that we know that we're working on areas that are suited to us and neglected. Then we want to make sure that we work on things directly related to effective altruism, so that the work that we do continues to be action relevant and doesn't go down rabbit holes. We want to make sure that we do research that wouldn't be done otherwise. So, for example, you might think that what normative ethical theory is the correct one is very relevant to effective altruists, but that stuff gets a lot of coverage already in ethics, so we don't think that we would end up doing work like that. We're likely to be working in within standard disciplines because that's the best way to actually get published and figure out who to hire, unlike the other research team in CEA, which wouldn't need to be so straight down the line about that. We want to figure out where we can add to the existing academic literature. So that means trying to find areas that are already grounded in the literature so that people associate this area as being real philosophical research, but where there's still a gap that needs filling. And then we might also be subject to some funding constraints in terms of what we can actually get funding for in order to research on. Here are a couple of examples of the kind of research that we're currently applying for grants on. We wanted to begin with work based on prioritization, since that's really at the heart of effective altruism. So one project is prioritization for non-consequentialists. So what kinds of constraints might we want to take into account that we currently don't? Either if we are, think that there definitely are constraints that might need to influence our action, or if we simply think that we should take moral uncertainty seriously and have some credence that there are constraints that we should take into account. We might also want to look at actions where it seems like all parties are being made better off, but it still feels like you're doing something wrong. So, for example, we might, in a rich country, accept immigrants, but with very limited rights. That's the kind of thing where it seems like everyone's being made better off. The immigrants are able to get jobs that are higher paid than they would have previously, and we get low-paid labor without needing to give up some of the other things that we might not want to give up. But it feels like there's something wrong going on there. And effective altruists typically have made the useful point that in these kinds of cases, we should be considering the consequences. We shouldn't just take our gut judgment and know that's not a good thing to do. But they tend not to have thought in a lot of detail about whether there might be some other problems going on here to do with getting involved in the causal chain being objectionable. Likewise, you might think that collaborating with evil is a problem. So you might think that some large foundations have earned their money illegitimately, maybe by establishing monopolies that they shouldn't have. In those kinds of cases, should we be helping them distribute that money to the most effective causes, or should we be worried about engaging with them? Another problem is that of cluelessness. So a lot of the consequences of your actions are going to be so far in the future, you just have no idea about them. And people have argued that this is a reason not to accept a consequentialist framework, because it seems like you really have no idea what the consequences of any of your actions are long term, and so really you can't choose based on the consequences. But other people are arguing that actually deontology equally suffers from the problem of cluelessness, and so if there are ways of solving it in that case, maybe there are in utilitarian and consequentialist cases. Amanda's actually got a poster on that at the conference, so go and check that out if you are interested in it. So here are just a couple of the worries that we have about setting this up. I've already talked about a bunch of them, but so we might be worried that the research team or effective altruism as a whole gets a reputation for being low quality. This might be easier than you would initially imagine because often in the kinds of subjects that we're working with, the more applied a research topic is, the less well it's thought of. So within philosophy, bioethics tends to have a reputation for not being a serious philosophical area, and economics tends to have similar kinds of problems. So it might be that effective altruism is going to be initially seen as not a good academic area unless we really push hard against that. We also want to make sure to avoid lock-in on one subject and that the research agenda gets too theoretical rather than being action-guiding. We might have insufficient funds. That would be troublesome. We might also worry about having a low output, which could be due to lack of focus. It's pretty difficult to work in academia on an area that you just don't have ideas on, which makes it difficult to have a centralized research agenda. It could be that people tend to have ideas that aren't very action relevant. Or it could be that academics end up spending a lot of their time on things like grant writing and other parts of administration, because typically funders want to fund the researchers, they don't want to fund any overheads, and that means that you end up with your researchers doing all the overheads. So we want to make sure that we avoid that.
Thanks. So let me talk a bit about what the fundamentals team intend to do. So we want to do firstly course prioritization, then explicitly comparing different courses, but then we also want to study considerations of crucial relevance for this prioritization. So I'll start to talk a bit about these crucial considerations. So we are specifically interested, particularly interested in crucial considerations which are not already studied by Future of Humanity Institute. They've been doing great work on this, particularly pertaining to existential risk, but also like general issues pertaining to technology and the general trajectories of the future of technology. So we think that they are uniquely well placed to study that, and there's no reason for us to do it as well. And then we also think that ethics is something that you already can pursue all sorts of ethical questions within academia, so there's no real reason to do that in a fundamentals team like that, like this. But on the other hand, we do want to study considerations which are specifically related to EA strategy. And these will often have to do with society, culture, and psychology as opposed to technology, which is what FHI to some extent focus on. So I should say that FHI and Center for Effective Altruism, we share office and cooperate very closely. So the team character for the people working on crucial considerations, that's likely to be a small team, having a high degree of freedom. And we will want people who have good generalist skills, good at big picture thinking, good at conceptual thinking. And we also want to sort of like avoid getting bogged down in long predictable projects because we think that this will reduce the rate of innovation. We want to like reserve time for big picture blue sky thinking. So the goals are then to inform EA strategy, to come up with ideas that potentially end up as new projects, and to shift the EA community's thinking on important issues, and also to contribute to raising the EA community's level of rigor. To that end, we're going to study epistemological considerations. I will say a little bit more of that. So some example questions could be, what new methods for doing good should we consider? Should we, for instance, like build new social movements other than effective altruism, which should focus on a specific issue? Should we work politically? Another question is with what is the appropriate level of epistemic deference in effective algorithms? Should we, as I said previously, defer to a greater extent to people who know more than us, or should we try to figure out the truth by ourselves? And here my tentative view is that we probably should defer to a greater extent. Another question is, what aspects of culture and social power structure can be used for advantage? So suppose that it is the case that social power is massively unequally distributed. Some people have way, way more power than others. If that is the case, and there's a good reason to think that that is the case, then we should presumably target those people that have power, so like high net worth individuals and people in universities and in top universities and in politics and so on. Another question is effective altruism underperforming? Like we have been amazingly successful at attracting all kinds of like very talented people. We have a message which convinces people to work extremely hard. We have, I think, and many think that we have a good methodology, and perhaps we should do even better than we're currently doing, given these advantages. What are the main threats to effective altruism? Another important question. And another is how we are now growing. We were significantly larger than we were just a couple of years ago. And presumably this should affect our strategy. Like, you know, if you're larger, then you have new opportunities. But there are also new risks present themselves. And this is something that we need to think hard about. Another question is, on what points should effective altruists behave differently from non-effective altruists? So effective altruism is like really a radical message if you think about it. Like it tells us that like all the time we should think about like how we could do the most good. And there's a case to be made that like that means that like our behavior should be different from others on the like whole range of issues. And perhaps we aren't like sufficiently far removed from like standard behavior in the 21st century. So, for instance, I think there's a case to be made for the notion that we are not focusing enough on helping fellow effective altruists perform better. So we are still focusing a little bit too much on our own direct impact as opposed to impact that goes via raising the effectiveness of other effective altruists. So let me move on to cause prioritization. Here we want to then explicitly compare the most promising causes such as X-risk and global poverty using quantitative models. So these plans are very tentative, right, I should add, but we want to build progressively more advanced quantitative models for cause selections and then write reviews of causes using these models. And they should take, attempt at least to take flow-through effects into account as well as far future effects of present actions. They should be clear about their ethical assumptions, and they should be clear about the levels of uncertainty of their assumptions and their conclusions. So what we don't want to do is to sort of like work out the methodology first before we start applying it, but we want methodological and empirical work sort of continuously inform each other. We want to work on these two issues in tandem. So this means that we will need people with quantitative skills and conceptual skills as well as people skilled at empirical research. But we also should emphasize that to some extent, we intend to sort of like synthesize or summarize others' research as opposed to doing first-order research ourselves, not least Open Philanthropy Project, which have been doing great work on evaluating interventions and causes. So you could say also that to some extent this work sits like between the institute and the crucial conservations work, which is a bit more far out. So we think that there's a greater chance for people working on this to apply for academic grants and to cooperate with the institute. Perhaps some of this work can eventually move into the institute. We would hope to be able to increasingly hire subject area experts using the Oxford brand. And then we want to gradually increase our level of methodological rigor. So our long-term vision, this is something that Michelle also touched upon, is to to launch effective altruist cause prioritization as a respected competitor of Copenhagen Consensus Center's report. I don't know if you know about it, but they publish, essentially, they do prioritization work comparing different causes like reduction of mitigation of climate change and different global poverty interventions. But they're not considering as sort of like far out causes like AI risk as we would want to do. So we hope to do better than them, simply put, and so I'll compete them eventually, see whether we succeed with that. And then to help spread cause prioritization as a meme, and also help spread the idea that we should use quantitative reasoning even under conditions of extreme uncertainty, because we think that that increases performance, but there is some suspicion of that at present. So it's important to spread that idea. I think we can move on to what we're looking for.
So the Institute is looking very much for academics, particularly, as I said, we tend to be better networked with philosophers than other fields, and we would really like to start on economics research early on. So we're looking for people to hire, people to collaborate with, whether that means writing joint grants or writing papers together. Also, for advisors, whether they whether they have views on what kind of research we should be doing or how we should be going about that, how we should be going about hiring people. We're looking for funding, and we're looking for more general advice, like on how to run grants well and how to start up and how to run academic centers. So any of you know about that or know other people who do, we would really love to be put in contact with them. I'm unfortunately have to rush off after this, but I'm doing office hours for the Institute. We'll both be there at 2 o'clock in Pauli. So come and talk to us or email us.
And the fundamentals team, for we are probably hoping to hire relatively soon. And for the crucial considerations, we want people then, as I said previously, who are good generalists, good conceptual thinkers, and who are really immersed in the EA movement, know the EA movement inside out. And then for course prioritization, we want quantitative skills, conceptual skills, the ability and inclination to summarize empirical knowledge, and then to some extent subject matter expertise. Even though realistically we realize that it would be hard to have people who have like subject matter expertise in all course areas. We would also like advice on what research areas to focus on, what people to recruit, and what methods to empower. And then once we start publishing our work, we obviously want input on that as well. We hope to publish most of our work online. So, yeah, get in touch with us. Here are our email addresses, michelle@effectivealtruism.org and stefan.schubert@centerforeffectivealtruism.org. Thank you very much.